Okay, well, we're in wrapping it up here today. We've got a lot of situations to cover with Atlanta. Again, this is a team we're not that familiar with, so a lot of the situational football and all is something we really gotta brush up on, hit on. I'm sure that'll be important in the game, like it always is, and just try to pull everything together here. But it's always a big challenge to go down there. It's a great environment. They're a good football team. Do a lot of things well. They're well coached. They've got a real good organization. So, we know it'll be tough, but looking forward to the challenge to going down there and competing against them Sunday night.
What are the biggest improvements you've seen in Marcus Cannon over his first couple of years, rookie year to now?
His rookie year, he missed, over half the year and just kind of started in the middle of the year. Last year he had a much better start to the season, and that carried over. This year he's, improved on his versatility. He's played inside as well as tackle. Also in some other goal line situations, things like that. He's done some of that, getting involved in the kickoff return and the wedge and, those type of things. So I think his game's expanded from a versatility standpoint and also just from, experience.
When you say versatility, you mean pass and run blocking or?
Pass and run blocking, guard, tackle, left tackle, both guards, right tackle. I mean, he really played right tackle only his first year, and a lot of that his second year. Last year for Sebastian a little bit more, his rookie year at the end of the season, right tackle. So, he's also, worked for some at left tackle. When Nate went to tight end early in the season, some of those packages. So, he's done a lot of different things for us. I don't think he could have done those his first year. It's come a long way since then.
In college, he played primarily.
Well, he played, at they flipped him. So he started off at right tackle, and then his senior year, if I'm right on that, I think they moved him to left tackle. Just kind of what they did. They always kind of took their senior, most experienced guy and put him over on the left side. So sort of go from right to left. Like a lot of college teams do, I'd say.
Bill, do you have different ways of charting, explosive plays? I know that it's become a statistic that has been more used, in the vernacular lately, but I'm sure you guys have done it over a period of time. How do the explosive plays allowed defensively by you compare through three games this year, maybe the last couple of years?
Well, we gave up a ton on them last year. I don't know. I don't really think it's that big of a thing. I mean, 30 yards, 40 yards, 45 yards, 35 yards. I mean, however you cut it up, it's probably going to be about the same. You have a couple of plays that are going to fall short of big explosive plays, but they're really pretty big plays. There's going to be, other plays that aren't. So I don't know. I mean, we obviously, any play that's significant defensively, like we're aware of, and we're aware of that as a potential repeat play for somebody else to look at it and say, even if they miss it, we still put it on the big play, look at it as a big play, say they overthrew it or something, but it's open, we look at it and say, well, if the next team sees that, they might, feel like that's a good opportunity. So we look at that as a, as a big play as far as trying to, correct it and do a better job with it ourselves. I mean, the plays are what they are. I mean, that's a matter of record, whatever, wherever you want to break it off, you can break it off, but there are a lot of plays that aren't big plays. And there's honestly, sometimes there's a couple big plays where you're kind of right there and you feel like you should make the play. Like we had a couple last year where, the ball went off our hands and went for a 40-yard catch when it really could have been an interception. So, I mean, again, if you were the other team looking at that saying, well, is that really, is that kind of play you really want to run? Or did they just have a fortunate result to it? So I think it's a little bit more by the actual play.
For instance, just to use a play from last week's game, on Tampa Bay's side, throw to Sudfeld, there were a couple guys running. They're not running free down the field that Tom missed. They're going to look at that and say, look, we don't care what the result was. That shouldn't happen. Have you had many of those plays defensively this year in the first three games with swings and misses for the other offense that you're still referring to as foot?
Yeah, I mean, there's always plays like that that you feel like you might be a little light on, and you don't want to be light in the deep part of the field. I mean, if you're light, you want to be light in the flat or, you know, and something underneath or that kind of thing where you got a lot of guys that can still make the tackle. You don't want to be light on stuff, you know, over your head and, you know, 20, 25, 30 yards downfield. So, yeah, there's plays that we've had like that, sure. I mean, every team has them. You want to make sure that those get pointed out and corrected or eventually it's going to come back and get you. I mean, you got to. You know, you got to cover those whatever the concept is, whether it's a man-to-man technique or whether it's some kind of, you know, pattern concept that gives whatever coverage you are in, you know, that there's a void down there and they had a guy standing in it.
And this would be a team that could do that, Atlanta?
Any team could do it, yeah, sure.
But more adept, maybe more adept just because of the skill of the quarterback? And
I think you got to respect every team's ability to do it. I wouldn't want to go up against any team and say, well, you know, let's leave a guy open 35 yards downfield. They won't hit him. I mean, I couldn't coach like that.
Bill, efficiency in the red zone, it's been a bit of a struggle. Why? And the second part to that, what have you worked on to try and improve upon?
Why? Because we haven't performed well enough. We have to coach and play better down there. What are we going to do? Coach and play better.
An odd stat on that red zone stuff that I was noticing. You guys have been in the red zone, at least in the AFC rankings, more than anybody else. Just thought I'd point that out. 13 times.
Yeah, we're offensively and defensively, we just need to perform better down there. We need to coach better. We need to execute better. So we got to do a better job. It's an important part of the field. And certainly, when you look at a team like Atlanta, that's been in three real tight games. I mean, you got to think that could potentially be the difference in this game as it was in their other games. So, you know, it's a big area of emphasis for us.
The fact that you guys are started 3-0, does that allow you to be more conservative with Rod and Danny as they come back?
We look at every week as really pretty much like a one-week season. We do what we can do that week to try to win, and that's what we try to do. No, I mean, sometimes there's a point, you know, later on in the season that things change a little bit, but we're certainly not there yet. So we're going to try to go down there and play well against Atlanta. We'll try to go out there and play well next week.
Well, a bit of a history question. When do you recall silent snap counts, offensive communication silently becoming such a big deal in the NFL? I mean, is it the last 15, 20 years? Domes, the onset of domes.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, it's really a shotgun formation. I mean, I think you can operate with the quarterback under center. I mean, it's loud, but you can still, you know, you can do it. But, you know, as the stadiums have gotten bigger, you know, we've gotten away from the baseball stadiums where, you know, there might be 7,000 or 8,000 people, but in a lot of those stadiums, the fans at midfield were, you know, 40 yards from the sideline because they were pushed so far back, and the majority of the people were in the end zone. So a lot of times it just got loud in the end zone, but. You know, I think there's, you know, a lot of circumstances. You have a lot of artificial crowd noise that there are different regulations on and so forth. But over the years, that's changed. Some of it was pumped in. Now there's different rules on that. But, I mean, you know, you have there's a lot of different, you know, forces at work here. So certainly being in the shotgun, not under center, pistol, gun, whatever you want to call it, the crowd noise situation, the stadium configuration, the, you know, all that, I think is – it's all played into it a little bit.
Any idea who started it?
I don't know. I think Seattle's always been one of the noisiest places. But, you know, you get stadiums like RFK or Old Mile High where the seats were aluminum seats. And they would beat on those, and it was like, you know, 60,000 sets of cymbals going off at the same time. I mean, and literally the whole stadium was... you know, was reverberating, like particularly in Denver where they had, you know, the Mile High, they like brought that, the third base line, you know, in kind of like they do in Candlestick, you know, but where they bring that in to, you know, put it next to the field. And so it's not real stable to begin with, you know, so, but those are some loud ones.
Have you ever noticed, a lot of people talk about the offense's inability to, or the difficulty to communicate on the road, but when you're at home, defense needs to communicate.
It's a reverse problem. Yeah, it's the exact reverse problem. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing in a kicking game. You know, on the road, it's your punt team and your field goal team, and at home, it's your punt return team and your field goal rush team, getting the communication, the call. You know, like your punt return team comes in there, and you got a couple of guys who are probably still on the defensive unit that are part of that team, and then, you know, are you going to rush? Are you going to return? What's the call? And you got gunners that you got to, you know, go out and cover, and so getting the communication to them, making sure everybody, you know, that's the reverse of the playing on the road. Playing at home is the, I mean, hopefully, you know, if you have crowd noise at home, then that could be a problem. If you don't have crowd noise at home, then it's not a problem. But if you have it at home, then, you know, it's a problem. And especially in the red area, you know, on the goal line where, you know, everything's closer and closer to the fans and all that.
Bill, the running game, it's a near identical number of touches for the three running backs. Not exactly, but pretty close. How much of that is just an equal division of labor based on fresh legs versus this is the situation, LeGarrette's better for this, or Stevens better for this?
Yeah, honestly, I think it's just worked out that way. I don't think it's – it could easily be different than that, but, it is what it is, so I'm not going to dispute that. But it's not like, oh, this guy's got 20, the other guy's got 15, the other guy's got 10. Let's give it to the guy who's got 10. Let's not give it to the guy who's got 20. I mean, like, that doesn't work like that. So it just – we use them the way we feel like's the best, and it's turned out balanced, but that may or may not be the way it is going forward. I mean, I think whoever our backs are, we have confidence in all of them. They've all been productive. So, you know, Shane, Leon, Brandon, Steven, LeGarrette, they've all been productive. So I don't think it's a big concern, like, oh, this guy's in the game. You know, we can't do this, we can't do that. But whichever guy's in there, we feel confident in. I think he'll do well with whatever we ask him to do. I mean, they all have.
Last question.
All right. Thanks.